Welcome to A Taste of the Past. I'm Linda Palacio, and I'll be your host for this half hour. And you are listening to Heritage Radio Network. And today, we're very proud to be sponsored by Whole Foods Market. And on Heritage Radio Network, I want to remind you that you can log in to listen to any of the archive shows at any time at heritageradionetwork.com. Today, we are talking about Jewish delicatessen, and we have with us David Sachs. Welcome, David.
Good to be here.
And David actually recently published a book called Save the Deli, out of his fear that they're going away, and we don't want to hear that. So, Jewish delicatessen, it is something that everybody knows and loves and has experience. I have to say, I think everyone has experiences.
I hope so.
But describe for us what you mean by Jewish delicatessen when you say Jewish delicatessen.
It's a restaurant where the primary purpose is to serve the meat-based foods, what they call in Yiddish the fleishig foods, of the Eastern European or Yiddish Jews. So these are foods that came out of the Jewish populations that lived in Eastern Europe for much of the past 2,000 years and sort of came together in the United States and in other countries is this kind of meaty canon with things such as pastrami and pickled tongue and corned beef, matzo ball soup, stuffed cabbage. These are sort of the best known foods, which are, I guess, kosherfied versions of Eastern European foods that then evolved and took on their own flavor and became something that was distinctly Jewish or Jewish American or Jewish Canadian.
Well, how did you get interested in, or why? Why did you write the book?
You know, my family.
What got you going?
What got me going? A hunger, a deep-seating hunger, and a vastly low cholesterol count that needed to be raised. You know, my family grew up eating Jewish delicatessen in and around Toronto when I was young. It was something that we always went to, and we always ate. And my parents were from Montreal, and so we would always go back to Montreal to visit grandparents and other relatives. And my father would take my brother and I to the delis of downtown because he wanted to show us sort of his world that he grew up in, which was kind of the equivalent of, you know, our Lower East Side East Village here in New York. It was the old Jewish area where, you know, his father was in the garment trade, and his father had actually passed away before I was born, of a heart attack brought on by a smoked meat sandwich.
Not a good thing to advertise.
I know. But, you know, and the six packs of cigarettes a day. I think that really had a lot to do with it.
But the sandwich makes a good story.
But the sandwich makes a better story and an opening to a book. And so it was really his way of I guess, socializing us into our past. We didn't have a collective history in Toronto. My parents moved there a couple years before I was born. We didn't have relatives there. We didn't have anything to point to in, you know, the Kensington Market, the old area. And so these trips to Montreal sort of showed us that these were special places. This was something sacred. And then later on, when I was in Montreal studying at McGill University, I took a Jewish sociology class and wrote a paper with a friend on the sociology of the deli. We did it because we thought it would be fun. You know, it like most of the papers I wrote in university and an easy mark. But in doing so, I was talking and interviewing delicatessen owners that I knew because, you know, there was no primary source material. There were no documents that I could go to in the library. And they were all telling the same story, which was that, you know, this business is really difficult. Hundreds, if not thousands of delis have disappeared, across the continent. And, you know, we all think we're next. And they all sort of said the same thing, whether I was talking to Montreal or Toronto, and I would make phone calls to New York. And I realized that there was this trend that the Jewish deli really was on its way out for some reason, that it had been declining. And so I wanted to find out why.
Well, and like any family-run business, eventually it reaches some sort of an end where someone doesn't want to take it over, or there are other reasons we will get to. But first of all, I have to say I am so completely impressed. Totally impressed. You actually, in your research, I know, went around to lots of delis and ate at a lot of delis. You actually worked behind the counter at Katz's?
Yeah, I had the lucky opportunity to to slice meat for a night.
That's one brave man.
It was foolish.
I mean, if anyone has made a trip to New York, most likely they've made a trip to Katz's, and if they haven't, then they haven't really been to New York.
No.
But Katz's is one, always has been a scene. Now it's, of course, you know, certainly on the tourist maps, but you know, Katz's has always been a destination.
I always say if you want to experience New York in, you know, one quick thing, it's the best place to do it, because everybody from all cross sections of New York society, Jewish, not Jewish, black, white, Latino, tourists, foreigners, wealthy people, poor people, are sitting next to each other in the same tables, eating the same food in this sort of madhouse carnival atmosphere that isn't put on and isn't sort of designed by anyone. I mean, it just sort of occurred this way. And so the opportunity to go behind the counter and work there, it was like stepping up to the plate with the Yankees.
Yeah, I was going to say, and you've got, you know, you better know what you're doing, because the lines move fast and furious.
It was literally being tossed to the wolves. I mean, they showed me how to cut. I showed up and the manager, night manager, Charlie, was like, okay, John was one of the cutters. Like, John, this guy's David. He's starting tonight, which is, you know, that doesn't happen. I mean, guys who start there generally start when they're 16, sweeping the floors and work their way up, you know, in four years or so, they can start cutting stuff. So here's some schmo comes out of nowhere and he's like, yeah, show him how to cut. And he kind of gives me this look like, who the hell are you? And he's like, all right, yo, watch this. Takes a big carving knife, carving fork, stabs it into the steam tray, and just fires off, like, you know, puts the pastrami in the thing, fires off a bunch of slices it in half, throws it on the bread, paints the mustard, like, yo, that's it, you got it, all right, next. And that's it. I was sitting there with a knife and a fork in my hand and customers lining up giving me orders. I had no idea what to do, but, you know, I sink or swim.
Well, we're going to talk a little bit more about Katz's, more about the history of Katz's, and the history of the deli in general when we come back.
How much is that pickle in the window? The one that's on top of the pail. Zug me, if it cost is that pickle in the window? I do hope that pickle's for sale. My ass off too. A pickle is good with hot doggies. Or salami, what's hard like a brick. But never eat pickles with ice cream. 'Cause ice cream and pickles don't mix.
Oy!
How much is that pickle in the window? Is it sweet or sour, Mr. Birkin? I want me a pickle, a big one. 'Cause a pickle too small is a jerkin.
Hi, welcome back to A Taste of the Past. I'm Linda Palacio, and I'm talking today with David Katz. David Sachs.
I've gotten that a million times.
Because we're talking about Katz's Deli. It's David Sachs. And David did a wonderful book called Save the Deli on the history of Jewish delicatessen. How did you decide how you were going to start your research on Jewish delicatessen?
Once I had put together a book proposal and gotten the okay from a publisher,
where were you going to start?
Yeah. Where was I going to start? I knew I was going to start in New York. And the first third of the book takes place in New York. And so I came to New York and when I was still living in Toronto, I crashed on a friend's floor for a month and just started calling up delis and asking to interview the owners and telling them what I was doing. And that was sort of it. And that really opened up, you know, how the business works, the economics of it all. It really taught me sort of the basics of everything.
Well, I was really impressed with how many primary sources you have in the book. And by primary sources, of course, not the original owners of these delis, but the person who bought it from an original owner or a second owner or, you know, a member of the family. And that, you know, that today is so rare that we get Usually we have to go on historical records and look up things if they're, you know, no longer there. So you did a great job in getting that down, so because that might not be around.
I mean, I think that the idea, what I really wanted to do in my approach to it was not take a very, you know, historical angle. And I wanted people to experience what I was experiencing. And so the only way you can really do it is to go there and taste and talk to the owners now. And in talking to them, you'll learn the history of their community. You'll learn where they sort of came from and whether it was their family or they bought it. You'll learn about their customers. But a lot of people were like, well, why didn't you write about, you know, this deli which existed 50 years ago or this deli which existed 50 years ago? And it's like, because, you know, what could I have written about it? I mean, I could have gotten archival things. I could have found old articles, but I wanted to write about places that were sort of existing in the here and now. And those would give me the richest sort of flavors.
And the voices you have in the book, I have to say, I can hear them. I can hear them behind the counter. It's great. So let's talk about, in fact, how Jewish delicatessens started, where they came from, what...
The Jewish delicatessen came out of Eastern Europe, where the bulk of the Jewish diaspora lived until really the late 19th century. And these people were in all these various communities. They weren't all just living in one block. They were living all over Eastern Europe, the Ukraine, Hungary, Romania, Poland, Russia, Lithuania. And, you know, because they were religious communities largely, they kept kosher. And so they adapted Eastern European recipes into things that were kosher. So, you know, pickled pork products became pickled beef products. Pig's blood sausage became sort of a chicken fat sausage, kishka, which is, you know, the Jewish version of the Polish dish. And so they, by adapting these things to their culinary rules, they form this type of cuisine. It all really came together, though, in New York at the turn of the 19th, 20th century, when a vast amount of immigration from Eastern Europe of Jews ended up in the Lower East Side, million and a half, 2 million Jews over the course of a couple short decades. And suddenly people were living next to each other who could taste the food of what the Jews in Hungary were having, and the Jews of Romania next door could show them how they could cook that certain dish, and it all really sort of came together. And then those flavors merged with the American institution of the diner and the restaurant and the sandwich to produce the Jewish deli that we know today. So mm-hmm. It's kind of that amalgam of Eastern European Jewish flavors and sort of the American diner experience.
So in New York, of course, you went to the oldest deli.
Katz's.
Katz's, right. But then around the same time, it wasn't, I mean, they were springing up pretty much
right. I mean,
all over the place at that
point. Like any ethnic community you're going to have with a huge amount of new immigrants, there's just going to be a ton of small family-owned restaurants because that's something that people could do easily, who were there to feed the people in the community who were working. I mean, these were people who worked in the garment business and as manual laborers. So they required a lot of cheap food. And if you go to Sunset Park and go to the Mexican area or Flushing, Queens and go to the Chinese area, it was the same thing. It was just all Jewish Eastern European food.
Well, you talked. We were talking about street food earlier before we went on the air, and you did mention in your book about push carts and
right.
street food. How that and then evolved into
right exactly. I mean, someone would have the husband would be, let's say, working the push cart, and he would be pushing the push cart, and the wife would bake knishes or bagels or pickle herrings or do these sorts of things, and they would sell it in the markets and the streets in and around Lower Manhattan. These were very, very, very poor immigrants, and so they just had to survive on the means that they could. And so, you know, the first thing they could do is sell bagels out of a basket or sell, you know, pickles out of a push cart, and then they could get a little money and rent a little space in a storefront, and then that storefront would expand, and they could, you know, turn that little takeout counter with a few seats into a bit more of a diner, into a full-fledged restaurant. And you see, as you kind of go throughout Manhattan, the evolution of these delis. So you get the little tiny takeout places in the Lower East Side, and then you got sort of the small dingy diner type places in the East Village, and then by the time people got up to Midtown in the 1930s and 40s, they're building these big, lavish restaurants, which serve everything, and they have a, you know, full hot kitchen and full menu, and the food's no longer kosher. You know, the Stage right. Deli or the Carnegie Delicatessen are sort of the
showpieces.
Yeah. And it was also at that time when they were really, the food was really being integrated and accepted by mainstream, you know, non-Jewish America. And so, you know, there's a great record, a vinyl album that I found called The Corned Beef Confucius. It's taken some time in the early 1960s, late 50s, at the Stage Deli. They hooked a microphone up to Max Asnes, the owner, and he's going around and he's interviewing all these Broadway and showbiz luminaries, most of whom who aren't Jewish, but it's funny, they, you know, they talk about the matzah balls and you know, they kind of pronounce everything less than perfect. But, you know, this food was one of the first ethnic foods that Americans really liked. And people think of deli now as just something that's American. You don't think of it in the same as you would think of Thai food or Burmese food or Mexican food. It's thought of as very American, but at that time it was this, you know, it was the trend. Let's go for deli, you know, Jewish food. It caught people's palates.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting because you talked about the huge German migration into America early, very early on, and there were huge German restaurants and beer halls, and mm-hmm. And they cooked some similar food, some of the, you know, preserved meats, but those are gone, and you can't really find too many of those.
No.
And it's, we see that with a lot of when there are pockets or ghettos of immigrants. And they long for, what do they long for? A taste of home, their food. And so all these restaurants spring up. And as they then spread out and assimilate, we lose some of that authentic ethnic culture. And that's...
Yeah, I mean, you know, they move out to the suburbs. And the thing is, you know, when you're in a dense city like New York or Chicago in a downtown area or a sort of more urban area... the restaurants tend to be smaller because the real estate is smaller and you don't have the room for, you know, you can seat 50 people or 60 people or something like that. So you need several restaurants to serve the great numbers of people who live around there. And in the suburbs, you can get, you know, 3,000 square feet out in some strip mall somewhere. And that one restaurant can serve, you know, the same amount of people as four other places that were in the city. And so... You know, it kind of dilutes it, and that's what happened. That's what happened with the delis, and I'm sure it's happened with other ethnicities as well.
All right. Well, and as far as what's served in the delis, you said it's the meat, you know, the meat restaurant. But you talked about the holy trio of meats, and those being, what did you?
Corned beef, pastrami, and pickled tongue.
And tongue, yeah.
And, you know, regionally, it's funny. People on the coast, so New York, Philadelphia, Florida, California, are really pastrami-centric.
Mm-hmm.
And in middle America, in Detroit, in Cleveland, Chicago, people really go for corned beef. Corned beef is sort of the mainstay of deli culture there. Mm-hmm. In Montreal and Toronto, they're really into smoked meat, Montreal smoked meat, which is kind of the bastard child of corned beef and pastrami.
And so, pastrami itself has a very interesting history. And that's something that... I would like to talk about when we come back. We'll take a short break. You're listening to A Taste of the Past on Heritage Radio Network.
Thank you.
Welcome. I'm Linda Palacio, your host of A Taste of the Past, and we're here talking with David Sachs, author of Save the Deli. We're talking about Jewish delicatessen here on Heritage Radio Network, brought to us today by Whole Foods. I can't read this book or look at this book without getting really hungry.
A job well done, thankfully.
I mean, you just, you know, talk about dripping fat off of pastrami sandwiches piled a mile high, and you know, my mouth waters. I remember going in, because I remember you talked about, you know, Katz's Deli, and I remember going in and getting one, ordering one sandwich, and then, you know, having a loaf of Levy's rye bread at home and making four sandwiches and feeding, you know, the kids and all the family off of one sandwich.
The abundance was standard.
Yeah. but let's talk a little bit about pastrami, because pastrami, you say that's, you know, that's really the corned beef. Pastrami was sort of the king, and then corned beef has sort of taken over in the delis around the country. But pastrami.
It's a very much a local thing. So, and a lot of it depended on where the population, a large part of the population came from. So pastrami is something that's associated with Romanian Jews and in some way Hungarian Jews. It came from the East. It has those spices and that smokiness. And Polish food is much more subtle and, you know, pickled and a little bit blander. And so cities where there's higher concentration of Polish Jews and Polish populations, I think, have more of that proclivity for corned beef.
Yeah. And actually, pastrami started out being made from geese and ducks.
Right. I mean, there wasn't a tremendous amount of beef in, you know, that the Jews in Eastern Europe had access to. It was something that was reserved for festivals or for weddings. It was very expensive and difficult to raise. And so the protein that they had most often was geese and duck and chicken, which they would season and cure and smoke in the same way that they did the pastrami. And only when they came to America and, you know, cows were just growing out on the plains and shipped in from Chicago that that beef became sort of the de facto staple.
Mm-hmm. Well, you, in your research, you really traveled coast to coast in finding delis all around. And who knew in some of these, you know, small areas around the country that there were, I'll ask you, authentic Jewish delis?
I mean, the thing is, you know, an authentic Jewish deli, the owner doesn't have to be Jewish. It doesn't have to be in a city where there are any Jews. It's the commitment to the food is what makes it authentic.
Jewish style or kosher style,
right.
Deli, as you say.
Yeah. You know, if someone is existing to serve that food and make it well and make it from scratch and not just slice, you know, Boar's Head brand pastrami as we sit across the street from the Boar's Head factory. That's what makes it a genuine Jewish delicatessen. So I've been to genuine Jewish delicatessens in, you know, small, very surprising places like Salt Lake City. And yet I've also seen, you know, not so genuine Jewish delis in places like Las Vegas and casinos, which are just trying to do a little bit of a concept of kind of bastardize the food.
But, I mean, Schwartz's in Montreal, we know, I mean, I know from Schwartz's in Montreal as being an institution. But a few other cities around the country in America have their institutions as well. Talk about some of them, let's say, from the Midwest to, you know, out to,
you know,
California.
Detroit has the Stage, Zingerman's, the Bread Basket.
Zingerman's, which has become this huge,
right. Zingerman's
business
is sort of a nouveau kind of gourmet style deli and food emporium. Chicago has Manny's and the Bagels and Kaufman's. Shapiro's in Indianapolis is, you know, well over 100 years old. There are even places in Denver that are sort of more recent, but, you know, like Zadie's, which became local institutions. Los Angeles has a tremendous amount of institutions, Langer's, Nate and Al's, Cantor's, Factor's, Brent's, you know, dozens of them. And Los Angeles is an incredible deli town. Yeah. Florida has, you know, a number, although there it's really been dwindling. And even a newer place that opens can become an institution very quickly. So next week I'm going to talk, or in 2 weeks I'm going to talk in Portland, Oregon at this deli, which opened about 2 or 3 years ago, called Kenny and Zook's, and it's become a local institution.
Now,
and
Portland it's a fantastic Portland place. Is now setting the standard for a lot of food.
I've never eaten so well in this continent as I've eaten in Portland. Yeah, it is incredible, that city.
That is coming back. Well, you, I talked about how, you know, buying one sandwich and feeding four people from a family of four from one sandwich at Katz's. And it wasn't a joke. I mean, there was so much meat on the sandwich that there was no, it would have gone to waste. Is this in part, which is something that you brought up in your book, in part what's caused some of the, at least financial demise of the institution?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, initially, you know, like I said, when these delis were forming in the turn of the century, it was largely immigrants who were going to them, and they could never have imagined in the shtetls of Poland or Rome or Hungary that they would be able to have, you know, a pound of meat in
a sandwich.
So
much meat.
Yeah. Right. I think it grew actually in the course of the past decades as a marketing thing, whereas, you know, one deli would say, we have a big sandwich. The next deli next door would say, we have a bigger sandwich, and they would sort of be these towers of Babel. But delis make the least amount of money off of their sandwiches. Their sandwiches are kind of these loss leaders where they make a very small profit margin. And so it's very difficult because, you know, 50, 60, 80% of people who go into a Jewish deli are going to get a sandwich. And, you know, nobody really drinks beer or wine or liquor in delis. So they make very little money off it. And it's very difficult. The thing that they exist to serve is kind of putting them out of business. Meat has gotten very expensive. Kosher meat has gotten even much more expensive and difficult to procure. And yet they can't pass those costs along to the customers because people just think, well, it's a pastrami sandwich. How could I pay? You know, you're going to charge me $20 for a pastrami sandwich? You're crazy.
It's already up near there.
I know. Well, yeah, it's certainly in New York. And so it's been very difficult for delis to deal with. They're caught between what the customers expect. The customers want a tremendous amount of meat for, you know, a reasonable price, and it's just very difficult for them to balance.
It's just amazing how it is a taste that so many people know and appreciate, and you know, it's not something you're necessarily going to go and eat every single day, but you would hate to see it disappear. You want it there when you want it. And I know this is a real concern of yours, and you even have a website.
Savethedeli.com.
Save the deli.
Where you can go and meet all sorts of other deli-loving freaks.
and there are plenty of them, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. One thing we didn't talk about, and because it's known as something else in a lot of places, and that's something that your grandfather, rest his soul, was enjoying, and that is speck. You have to mention speck
closing remark is speck was the pickled fat from the top of the brisket, which was then dusted in paprika and cayenne, grilled and sliced thin. It was fat as a condiment on a sandwich. Schwartz's in Montreal was sort of the last place to do it. They don't even do it anymore. They would do it on a special order, but it's a very sort of rare thing. It's gone the way of its customers.
Yeah, we have fatty ham reason. That's speck, but it's not the speck
not
that
Jewish
you refer
speck.
To, not yeah. Jewish speck,
kosher
right?
Speck.
Right. Just something that makes your mouth water as you read about it, and I can feel the grease dripping down my chin and down my chest. But we're here at Roberta's Pizza and Restaurant in Bushwick, and they have mighty good pizza, so that's just going to have to do.
That sounds good to me.
Well, David, it's been a pleasure, and we hope that we can keep the delis alive, and if this hasn't made you hungry for a pastrami sandwich, I don't know what will, everybody. But thank you for listening to A Taste of the Past. I hope you've enjoyed this little culinary historic journey. And again, we are on Heritage Radio Network, and you can log in at heritageradionetwork.com. And we've been brought to you today by Whole Foods Market.